Accession number 18535, Reel 3.
Came along and I bought a ticket for to Gleiwitz.
That was how far away?
20 minutes in the bus, 20 minutes to
now
half.
Now, you had your route already planned. You knew where you were going.
Oh, I did, yes, yes.
And what was the idea, to get over to Sweden or what?
Yes, I wanted to get onto a Swedish boat in at Stralsund. Mm-hmm. That was my main idea.
Anyhow, you're on the bus.
Anyway, on the bus to Gleiwitz. Got to Gleiwitz and got off the bus, made my way for the station, which was I found very easily. Just about to go into the station when there were two chaps at the barrier looking at people's documents. The usual raincoat, trilby hat. So they may have been quite innocent, but I thought it might be Gestapo, so I wandered away. Wandered around the town for about three quarters of an hour, and from a distance had a look in, and they'd gone. So I went into Gleiwitz and bought a train, bought a ticket for Breslau. Got the train from Breslau quite easily. At Breslau, I changed and I wanted to go to Berlin. So I bought a ticket for Berlin. That was quite easy, only on the slow train. I wasn't going on a fast train. Got a slow train to Berlin. Got on that train, and that got as far as a place called Görlitz, and which we knew was one of the headquarters and centres of the Gestapo area. So I didn't... we were told then at Görlitz, they announced that there would be a delay for perhaps 2 hours. All very dark on the platform, very, very dark, no lights.
You could understand German very well at this time.
I could, yes. My German had improved tremendously. Mm. So at Görlitz, some people going out of the station into one of the waiting rooms. The waiting rooms in Germany are very good. They always get coffee and they're served very nicely and that sort of thing. So I thought, no, I'd better not do that. I'd better stay. And on the platform, there were toilets. So I went into the toilet. Now, by that time, that was getting near midnight. It took me a long time to get as far as I did. And I began to feel I wanted to shave. So I had to use the cold water out of the tank in the toilet to have a quick shave.
Oh, you carried a razor with you?
I did, yes. Yeah. I had a shave there. And eventually, announced that the train was going, so... In the meantime, they changed that train. A different train had come in, but it was a real old-fashioned slow train with horrible wooden sloping seats that if you didn't sit upright, you slid out of. In the dark, I got in, and a young woman came beside me and started speaking to me. But at that stage, I thought, is my German good enough to carry on a conversation? So I made out I didn't hear. I just stayed quiet. I didn't say a word. So that took me to Berlin. Eventually got to Berlin, probably about 9 or 10
minutes. You didn't get into conversation with anyone else?
Not in the train, I didn't, no. On my first part of the journey to Breslau, from Gleiwitz to Breslau, a couple of German service police come in, all brutal-looking men they were, with great big hard leather boots, great big metal plates on their chest, with their number on and one thing and another. Giant men they were. Oh, I'm sorry. They had a look at my papers, and they asked, you know, Ausweis, and I just passed it up to them, and they just looked at it and passed it back to me. And so that was very pleasing, that was, because I thought it might be a dangerous moment. But I got to Berlin, went through Görlitz, got to Berlin, and Berlin was beautiful. The sun was shining, it looked beautiful. I walked up Wilhelmstrasse, shops busy, elegant women, nicely dressed. Went into a little bar, and I was getting hungry then, and I was a bit nervous about bringing my chocolate out to eat because it smells so strong, chocolate, especially to people who haven't had chocolate for a long time. So I went into a bar and had a plate of vegetable soup, like mostly carrot it was. It wasn't very appetizing, but still it filled my stomach up. And then I had to find the station to go to the north, and I couldn't find it. But in the middle of a big circus was a little platform, and the usual German policeman directing traffic with like a little postman's hat on, the old-fashioned postman's. So I went right up to him and said, could you tell me where the station is for the north? And he bent over and he put his hands on my shoulders and turned me around like that. He said, there, a big building for the too posh a building to look to me to look like a station. But anyway, so it's very kind of him. So then I got the station, got the train to.
How long have you been on the loose now? About 24 hours.
Yes, yes, yes. Just Berlin, yes, roughly the 24 hours. Perhaps a bit longer because there was a long delay at Görlitz. Anyway, then I went from Breslau, Berlin to Prenzlau. Prenzlau, I changed there and eventually got the train to Stralsund. Stralsund, I came out the station. No any idea where I was. Tried to look around for a dock area. Nothing looked like a dock area to me. Wandered around the tiny little narrow cobbled streets, typical sort of naval town, you know. In the pubs, as you might call it, could hear the Germans with their deep voices singing their songs or one thing or another. In the end, I thought, well, I can't, nothing I can do about it. I'll go back to the station and had a coffee in there and almost went to sleep. When suddenly another couple of service police come in, spoke to one chap, hooked him out, eventually came up to me and I made out I was half asleep. One tapped me gently on the back, Ausweis, showed him my Ausweis again. He said, oh, so go back to me, go on, carry on sleeping. He said, perhaps because I was very blonde in those days. And so he left me alone. Came anyway, stayed there till about 6 in the morning. Came out then and thought, must find this docks. I wandered around and eventually I went down a slope over a bridge and there was the dock area. Wire fence all around, barbed wire around, piles of timber, which I guess must be the dock area. So I thought the only thing is I'll get in there because I can easily hide amongst the timber. Jumped over the, managed to get over, threw me things over the top, climbed over the wire, very difficult at the top to drop down the other side, but anyway, I managed it without hurting myself. I hadn't gone 30 yards when suddenly a voice said, halt, halt! And there's a German trying to put his revolver out of his holster. It was one of the dock police. He'd seen me somewhere jumping in, asked me why I was doing it. I said, I was late for work. And he said, where are you working? And I told him the name of the firm. He said, no such firm. I said, yes, there is. I'm Belgian. Showed him the papers, Belgian electricity. No such firm here. You know, you must come along to the office. So it said, and his gun was shaking like that. He was more scared than I was. So he took along to the office, and there were another couple of policemen there, dock policemen there, and they said, he's a deserter, you're a deserter. No, not a deserter. He didn't like the idea of it. They said, call the police. Now, I didn't want to be handed over to the police, so I, at that stage I said, no, I'm a RAF prisoner of war, escaped prisoner of war, and I'm the property of the army. You must hand me over to the army. Nobody else, the army. Anyway, they did hand me over to the police, as it happened. I had to walk through the streets of the police station with a couple of guards. They took away my braces and undid me shoelaces. I had to walk in the gutter. They got me to the glass house. It was like a naval glass house, actually. I was handed over there. But the two chaps who took me showed me where I should have gone in order to get onto a Swedish boat. They said, what were you trying? I said, I was trying to get this. Oh, yes, you shouldn't have gone that way. Instead of over that bridge, you should have carried on straight, turned to the left, and there's the docks. We'll show you. They walked on before they took me to glass and showed me where the glass house was.
So why did you have to admit it so quickly? I mean, what was the problem about being handed over to the police?
The police invariably handed you over to the Gestapo. And then I might have to explain where I got the papers from. It was a far more dangerous situation. I was told, try not to fall into the hands of the police. The army's all right, but not the police. But anyway, I was put in this naval glass house, and that was all right. Not too bad. I probably showed off a bit. When they used to have an exercise yard, I would go out and run and, like, shadow box to keep myself fit and that sort of thing. They used to come out and watch me, whereas their prisoners used to be shackled. And they used to walk around shackled. But
did they congratulate you that you managed to get so far?
Oh, yes, they did. They thought I was quite something. right up there at Stralsund. They could hardly believe it. They'd had very few prisoners up there. But all the time I was finding this thing, I thought, come on, if only I'd done this and done that, you know, I might have been all right. I was very worried about this policeman when with his gun shaking, and I thought, well, I'm the last thing I wanted was get shot. So I was up in the prison up there for about a month before they sent a guard for me from the main camp, because I'd completely confused them, because I'd escaped from a working party camp as Private Len Murray. But when I was recaptured, I gave my name as Sergeant Maurice Main of the RAF. Well, they couldn't make that out at all, because there's no records for Sergeant Maurice Main escaping, not from the RAF at Lambsdorff, and they didn't know anything
about
it.
So the real Len Murray was still...
He was still in my compound. Yes, yes.
Yeah. In your uniform.
In my uniform. Thoroughly enjoyed it, he said. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Best time of his prisoner war life, that was, being amongst... He's proud to put on that blue and with all sergeants and WOs and one thing and another, and all buzzing things always going on. You know, chaps going out to the window at night and coming back later on, the radio on. Never seen that in any of the army camps. I mean, we used to put the radio out at night, long lead, right across two barracks, stretch it out, and then all the news would come through. The excitement was tremendous, especially when we started winning the war, but he enjoyed that. So he was still back there.
So you were sent back to your old camp then, were you?
I was sent back to the old camp. Lots of adventures on the way. One, I was on the loose the same time as the Great Escape. You remember the Great Escape, when lots of them were shot, you know, yeah. Terrible time that was. And that was near Görlitz, where I told you that was like a Gestapo centre. So as I was coming back near Görlitz, I think we stopped at Görlitz with my guard, who was ever so tired because he couldn't sleep, you see, because he had me, I'd only have to get up to go like that, and he'd be so nervous. Wasn't a bad chap, but he had to do his duty. On Görlitz platform, he met a lot of the chaps from his old regiment. All very young they were. So we sat in a big circle on the platform, all discussing all sorts of things. And one of them said to me, you know, lots of men around here have been shot. Fliegers like yourself. He said, you'll probably be shot when you get back. Very friendly. And then we eventually got to Berlin. The guard took me back to Berlin. At Berlin, he was almost collapsing with tiredness. And incidentally, when we got to Berlin, an officer made me walk in the gutter, made him fix his bayonet. And so we had to walk, because in the meantime, Berlin had been heavily bombed. I couldn't believe what I saw, the piles of rubble on each side of the road, where, you know, 3 or 4 weeks previous, it had been lovely and clear. Anyway, I had to walk in the gutter.
3 or 4 weeks? You'd been on the loose that long, had you?
Well, no, I'd been kept in his prison up there about 3 or 4 weeks. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Anyway, when he took me to the Kommandantur, to see where if he could leave me there for night, and it was a most unusual underground building with, like, great big cages with wooden bars in front of the cage, huge cages. It must have been arches under the ground somehow. And in these cages, they were full of German deserters, officers, all ranks, Navy, Army, Air Force, all ranks, pacing up and down inside of these cages like lions, you know. But sitting outside was a great fat German on a high stool, with a big cigar, smooth, silky hair back. And my guard said, could he leave me here for the night? And I was escaped prisoner of war. And he said, he's too good, he can't go amongst that lot. He said, he's far too good. He said, no, can't have him here. I'm sorry about that. And he was very friendly to me. So I had to be taken to a prison on the outskirts of Berlin. And I was taken to this prison, went right upstairs, and that was a grim experience, because I was put into a cell, a dirty cell with a dirty, filthy blanket and just a bucket in the corner. And it was empty. I don't think there was any other prisoners in it, because I never heard a word, but I heard him go down the stairs, and there was a main guard downstairs, and heard all the doors clang. And there was an air raid that night, and it was quite frightening, being in this prison. But anyway, he came for me at about 9 o'clock next morning and picked me up, and we continued our journey down to the main camp. And, well, that was about it. Came down at the main camp, still in my natty little Tyrolean hat and a collar and tie, and that was something, because it was quite a welcoming party inside the camp. The word had gone around as an escaped prisoner. Moggy Main was coming back, and that was quite something.
Len Murray's life of Riley came to an end, I suppose.
Yes, that was very careful. He was spirited away. Yeah. He was spirited away and put back with him. How they did it, I don't know. But he was taken out of the RAF compound by the RAF committee. They got him out, smuggled him back into the New Zealand barracks, and he was back in the New Zealand. So Len Murray had an escape, and Maurice Mayne, they'd heard, and he was going back. But I had to do about 2 months in what they called the Strafe Barracks, the punishment barracks. And that was some experience, because some of the roughest blokes I'd ever met were there. Really tough. There were chaps there who had broken out of prison camp only to go burglaring. To break into other... Yes.
British villains.
Yes, they were. They were villains. There were also chaps who punched German officers in the face or something like that. All types. There was a young New Zealander, very young, who tried to pinch an aircraft. He'd escaped and he tried to get onto an airfield and pinch a German fighter, but he got caught. Can't remember much about him because I'd only been there a couple of days and he's gone. But they were a really rough lot. And Scott took me under his wing and said, and called me Mulkey. I don't know where he got the name from. I go, "Well, I'll look after you, Mulkey," he said. He said, "You want a cup of tea?" I said, "Oh, a cup of tea? What, in the punishment barracks, you know?" And he went away. Later on, he had a great big mug full of tea. No sugar, but it was tea. And later on, at the far end of the barrack, someone shouted out, "What the hell? Who's pinched our tea?" Someone had paid a fortune in cigarettes for a packet of tea. Because this Scott, who looked after me, he'd pinched their tea. So we invited them down to have a cup of tea with us. But that was a rough barrack. Really was rough. It was my job while I was there to talk to the guard on the gate, get them friendly and chat, might give them a cigarette, while chaps could jump over the wire into the next compound and go marauding down into the main camp, see what they come back with.
They were thieving
they were rough. And then they wanted boxing. We had their box, and the box with no gloves on at all. It was bare fist fighting. Terrible.
All this time, I mean, while you've been a prisoner of war, presumably you were in touch with your family, were you, through the Red Cross? You had mail?
Yes. Well, I never had any letters because my letters were going to Len Murray, you see. But where possible, I wrote home, and I wrote in the name of Len Murray.
Yeah.
And my father gathered something was wrong, and he got in touch with the Red Cross, and they told him just keep quiet about it, et cetera, that I probably was planning an escape.
Yeah.
So he was pretty good, my father. He used to keep in touch with the Air Ministry and to find out what was going on. Yes, and in the end, I did fortnight in solitary, you know, while I was, as my punishment. The Strafe Barracks, punishment barracks, were only there to get you ready to go into solitary. But I did a fortnight in solitary. First couple of days were miserable, but you gradually got used to it.
This was back in your old camp, wasn't
it? Yes. Mm. Now and again, a cigarette would come through a tiny window at the top. It was open, no glass in it. Already lit and burning. Never found out who did that, but the cigarette used to come through. Yeah.
Of course, I suppose there was a leavening of criminals there, wasn't there? Because of the ingenuity of it.
There was all types.
You know, forgery and stuff like that.
Oh, yes.
There must have been some villains in there who could contribute their skills.
Oh, yes, there were. There were. I met one of them afterwards in the war in Rome. After the war, many years after the war in Rome. And he was going to restore some documents in Venice, not Rome, in Venice I met him. And a lot of documents had been damaged by water and one thing. And he was one of a team going out there to restore these documents and write them up in their old script. And he was one of the folks in the camp who was involved in forgery. I mean, cameras were, the blokes had got cameras. You know, all sorts of things. They smuggled in, got them in. The German used to come in to empty the latrines with a great big sort of a barrel, a huge, huge thing, horrible thing it was. And he used to be, obviously a very poor man, And for a few cigarettes, you bring in all sorts of things, you know. So coffee, perhaps if they got coffee in Red Cross parcel, that was gold dust to the Germans. So they use that.
They didn't
bartering.
Steal anything from the Red Cross parcel.
Well, we think that the Germans stole a lot of the Red Cross parcels because we never got anywhere near what we should have had. We should have been sent one parcel per week. That's what our people contributed for. Sadly enough, a lot of them used to be pinched at the London docks.
Really?
Yeah, that was sad. But the Red Cross parcels, when they did come, were very useful for bartering.
How did they travel? I mean, they started in England. How did they reach Germany? Via Switzerland?
Switzerland, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Switzerland. They came by train into Germany from Switzerland. And,
but how did they get to Switzerland? Because it's landlocked. They couldn't send it by a ship, could they?
No idea.
Mind the microphone.
Oh.
Sorry.
Yes, no idea. I think sometimes they came from Sweden, but even then that was across the sea. When it's a, how they got them there, no idea.
So anyway, you stayed then in the cage until the end of the war, did you?
Yes, just before the end of the war, at round about Christmas 44, and just a few days after Christmas, the Russians were very close to the camp, and you could hear the guns. They're only about 10 miles away. And for some unknown reason, the Germans took all the RAF out of this camp, or nearly all the RAF, about 1,000 of us, lined us up outside the camp, gave us all, to our surprise, a whole Christmas parcel each, a Red Cross parcel each, and started marching us westwards. And, it was great to start with. Bitter cold weather. It started marvellous because we thought we were going home. Well, that march lasted all through January, all through February, all through March, and it wasn't till the middle of April that we stopped. You know, we'd do perhaps 12 miles, 10 miles. We might sleep at the farm overnight in the hay, sometimes in big, like, hangars on the concrete floor. It was dreadful. Lots of blokes died. I think that was the worst time I had during the war, that long, dreadful march.
Because your Red Cross parcels didn't last very long, I suppose.
Well, no, sadly to say, we threw a lot of the stuff away. Because when we first started off, we thought it was fine, because we had a little bit of kit that we might have got, and a £10 parcel, a £10 thick cardboard box. But as the time went on, got so heavy and so exhausted. And we were going across fields, and not nice firm roads, but fields and through forests. You'd find something in your bag to throw away, and I threw away such a lot of things. I told you earlier on, when we'd been tied up with Sisal, the Red Cross interfered and said that we shouldn't be tied up like that, we should have proper manacles. So the Germans put manacles on us, like handcuffs with a long chain in between, which was easy to move about, but we soon found out to open them with a piece of metal like a sardine key. Soon found out to open them, that was no problem. And each night we used to pinch a pair, and I had a pair, which I was going to keep for a souvenir. But when I was on this long march one day, I looked at them, I couldn't carry them any longer, I threw them away. I had a beautiful big Canadian diary with all sorts of interesting things in it. I had to pitch that away. And then you pitch a tin of ham away, or a tin of this one, to lighten the load. It got so heavy.
But what did you live on then?
Well, we had mainly bread. One or two places we stopped at night, we might get a soup. One place was, I remember, beautiful soup we had, as much as we wanted. One very, very big farm. But mostly it was just bread. We were absolutely starving most of the time. Chaps were in a terrible condition when they finished. And at the end, I went down with dysentery, got it very, very bad, and put into a sort of barn with lots of blokes groaning. And, oh, gosh, gosh, you know, I hate thinking about that. But, yes, I was in a bad way in the barn, but I lost the track of what I was going to say now. But
where did you reach in those 3 months?
A place called Bad Salzer. Bad Salzer, which is was about 800 miles from where we started.
Really?
Yeah, long
to the
way.
West?
Yes, to the west, yeah.
What, near Frankfurt or somewhere like that?
Yes, yeah. Yeah. And when we, quite suddenly one morning, after I'd been taken off the march and everything, the Americans, suddenly tanks come through, and I didn't know if they were Russians or Americans. They all looked alike to me, and that was it. We were released by the Americans.
Oh, do that again. You met up with the Americans?
Met up with the Americans who released us, came into the camp and said, don't stray from the camp because they're still fighting in the area, but what do you want? So he said, well, it's food mainly. We haven't seen meat for 3 years or something like that. So I said, right. The next thing, they drove into this very small camp at Bad Salt, so we've had a very small place, French, all races there. They brought in about four big pigs, and said, anybody been a butcher? Any butchers? Well, there's only one chap, about 20, who'd been a butcher's assistant when he was about 17, and he was given the job of killing the pigs and butchering the meat. And about midnight that night, they said, meet up. And we all rushed out, and we were given a great big piece, like a huge chop, I was remembering, great big piece. Well, with old bits of tin, which we hammered out and made sort of frying pans with, we cooked this meat. Oh, God, we was ill. Oh, we were terrible, all of us. Oh, they were crawling to the loo later on. You know, oh, we were so ill, because meat hadn't been... No, I couldn't take it. And so... Anyway, after a few days, I teamed up with a South African and two Frenchmen, and we went out to try to forage for food. We managed to get some bread from a little house. People were fighting out their lives. You know, we knocked on the door and asked them for bread, and we gave them something. I don't know what it was. It might have been cigarettes. But anyway, we got some cakey stuff from bread. We ran into some Russians. Oh, we got a chicken, it was still alive. We ran into some Russians who were on the loose as well. One took the chicken away from us, and with his, it was still alive, the chicken. We weren't sure how we were going to kill it. And just with his knife, just cut the chicken's head off like that. Oh, God. So we thought it would be best plan to let them have the chicken. Horrible, fierce-looking blokes. They were like Mongols, you know. But... And that more or less, that was it. Just except that I was called out one day. I had to go out and take the surrender of a German officer. Just outside the camp was a nice house. And apparently there was a German officer on leave, wounded, from the Eastern Front. And he wanted to give himself up in the proper manner. So I don't know why they should ask me, I suppose, because I spoke a bit of German. So I... went out the camp. Funny feeling for the first time to be outside free, you know. Walked up to this house, got a very nice house, and a big German lady opened the door and said her son wishes to surrender. So he come down the stairs, a very big man, and he had his leg in plaster from hip to toe. And he politely handed me his revolver. And he had two beautiful German, big, heavy German valises, all that style, but much, very, very big. And so I said, well, I'll take him down to the camp. But as we were going down the hill, because he couldn't walk very fast, a jeep came along with four American service policemen in it. And they said, and I was carrying one of the Germans' bags. They said, what the hell are you carrying that for? Let the Kraut do it himself, you know. And then they got hold of his bags and flung them in the jeep. One of them got out, and they drove off with his bags in the jeep and made him walk down where they took him, not to our camp. I don't know, but I thought, oh, most inhumane treatment that was.